The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management. This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston.
Buttermilk sky, I'm keeping my eye peeled on you. What's a good word tonight? Are you gonna be mellow tonight? Old buttermilk sky, can't you see my little donkey and me? We're as happy as a Christmas tree, heading for the one I love. I'm gonna pop her the question, that question. Do you, darling, do you do? It'll be easy, so easy, if I can only bank on you. Old buttermilk sky, I'm telling you why, now you know. Keep it in mind tonight. Keep a brushing those clouds from sight. Old buttermilk sky, don't you fail me when I'm needing you most. Hang a moon above her hitching post and hitch me to the one I love. You can if you try, don't tell me no lie. Will you be mellow and bright tonight, buttermilk sky? You can if you try, don't tell me no lie. Will you be mellow and bright tonight, old buttermilk sky?
Welcome to Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you
so
drop in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my
ice.
Mother will start to
beautiful
worry.
What's your
and
hurry?
Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace.
So
roar.
Really I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't
well,
hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink.
Put
more.
Some records on while I
the neighbors might think
maybe it's bad out there.
Say, what's in this
no
drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how
eyes are like starlight
to
now
break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no,
mind
no,
if
sir.
I'm moving
at
closer.
Least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Baby, but it's cold outside. is
but
gold.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The answer
but
is no.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This welcome is
how
big.
How lucky that you dropped
so
in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the
waves
door.
Waves upon the tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is
ooh,
vicious.
Ooh, your lips are delicious.
Well, maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to get
but
home.
But baby, you freeze out there.
Say, lend me a
it's
comb.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been
I
grand.
I thrill when you touch my
but
hand.
But don't you see?
How can you do this thing to
there's
me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
at
sorrow.
At least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and
I
died,
really can't
get
stay.
Over that old doubt. Ooh, baby, it's cold.
Baby, It's Cold Outside. That's Johnny Mercer singing along with Margaret Whiting, Paul Weston and his orchestra. And before that, we had Paul Weston and his orchestra with the Hoagy Carmichael tune, Old Buttermilk Sky, sung by Matt Dennis. Welcome to Tube Talk. This is the Antique Radio Collecting Show, the original Green Movement. We recycle old songs, we recycle old radios, we recycled old memories.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my man and I ain't together. Keeps raining all the time. Get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time. When he went away, the blues walked in and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can't go on. Everything I had is gone. Stormy weather since my man and I ain't together. Keeps raining. Once more, can't go on. Everything I had is gone. Stormy weather since my man and I ain't together. Keeps raining. Stormy weather.
That was Keeley Smith. And what a nice voice she has for the radio, huh? Stormy weather. If you could listen to that all the time, you wouldn't mind if it really did rain all the time. A nice piece of music. Just trying to set the mood a little bit. This is Tube Talk. We talk about antique radio. We talk about radio from days gone by, the programs, the music. And it's interesting in today's world with such a big emphasis on being green that nothing gets repaired and fixed anymore, especially electronics, generally winds up getting thrown out. There was an article in the Globe a couple of years back about a couple of guys who were kind of lonely. If you remember the old Maytag repairman, he was always this lonely guy waiting to fix a washing machine, but nobody ever called him because they were just made so darn good. Lonely job for TV and radio repairman these days, I'll tell you. And the story in the Globe talked a little bit about a couple of guys, one of whom I know, a fellow who runs a TV shop over in Brookline, independent TV sales and service. Talk about the last of a dying breed. But in addition to the fact that nothing gets fixed and it's just as easy to replace something as it is to repair it, you know, they chatted a little bit about who's left, who actually repairs TVs, who actually repairs radios in the state of Massachusetts. So the folks who wrote the article went up and chatted with somebody at the Division of Professional Licensure up at the State House and looking to see, you know, how many people still even hold a license to go ahead and actually do electronic repair work. Well, according to the Massachusetts Division of Professional Licensure, just 14 people are licensed to do television and radio repair in Suffolk County, 11 of them in Boston, which is really sort of a sad state of affairs if you think about it, with the emphasis on trying to be green and reuse, recycle, respect the world and its natural resources. We're sitting here throwing flat-screen TVs, computers, cell phones out the window faster than they can manufacture the latest version of them that we have to have. We got to have it. But these guys who were in the world of radio and TV repair would take something, a few parts, little sweat, little brain, manage to get the thing back to working order. It's probably just the nature of the beast these days. But if you do find an antique radio that's been in your family, or you find one at a yard sale, or you go to a antique radio club swap meet, you can still find folks to do repair work for you. Repair work, bring that thing back to life, make it sound as good as it ever did. You can find lists of folks who do restoration work on websites like the Radio Attic at radioattic.com. They have a resource list. They have a list of folks all over the country who do repair. Antique Radio Classified, which is another great publication for radio collectors. Antique Radio Classified is a marketplace of sorts, but it's also full of articles on how folks have done their own restoration work, people who are adept at it. But there's also advertisement section, people who will take your radio in, bring it back to life, make it safe to play again, repair the vital organs, so to speak. All of this can be done. You can still keep that radio in the family. A lot of radios are interesting to hang on to as well, especially if they have what's called the RCA jack or the phono adapter. Many sets, especially in the 40s and 50s, were used for phono aux. You know, you could plug your phonograph in because the speaker on the phonograph wasn't too hot. Plug it into the speaker. Well, that standard RCA jack can be used to plug in your iPod into your radio. It could plug a tape deck. You could use it for any source, really. It's a standard RCA adapter. You can still hear, despite what might, you know, the limited content might be that's broadcast on air on radio, you can still hear whatever you'd like, whether that's music, whether that's old radio shows, whether that's some content that you've downloaded from the net. And it can be kind of an interesting thing to do, to take, you know, a 60, 70-year-old radio, plug in your sound source, and play some modern music on it. That's kind of a trip, too. We've established an email address for the show. If you'd like to leave us some comments, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. That would be TUBETALK, @gmail.com. How about a little Stranger in the Night with Frank Sinatra?
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wandering in the night. What were the chances we'd be sharing love?
before the night was through. Something in your eyes was so inviting. Something in your smile was so exciting. Something in my heart told me I must have you. Strangers in the night, two lonely people, we were strangers in the night. Up to the moment when we said our first hello, little did we know, love was just a glance away, a warm embracing dance away. And ever since that night, we've been together, lovers at first sight. In love forever, it turned out so right. For strangers in the night. Love was just a glance away, a warm embracing dance away. Ever since that night, we've been together, lovers at first sight. In love forever, it turned out so right. For strangers in the night. Doo-dee-doo-bee-doo.
How about a little Glenn Miller?
As I love you, don't let me love you. If I must pay for your kiss with lonely tears, say it's not moon love, tell me it's true love. Say you'll be mine when the moon disappears.
Regardless of what type of radio you're listening to the show on this evening, that we're particularly fond of a large wooden cabinet with a nicely lit dial, soft tubes glowing in the background, gentle hum of the transformer, playing nice music on a nice big speaker. Oh, a nice Philco or a Zenith or an RCA. That's what we prefer. But the Mills Brothers would sound nice on any type of radio, don't you think?
I'm gonna buy a paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other fellows cannot steal. And then the flirty, flirty guys with their flirty, flirty eyes will have to flirt with dollies that are real. When I come home at night, she will be waiting. She'll be the truest doll in all this world. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a fickle-minded real-life girl. I guess I had a million dolls or more. I guess I played the dog game for and all. I just quarreled with Sue. That's why I'm blue. She's gone away and left me just like all dolls do. I'll tell you boys, it's tough to be alone. And it's tough to love a doll that's not your own. I'm through with all of them. I'll never fall again. Say, boy, what you gonna do? I'm gonna buy a paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other fellows cannot steal. And then the flirty, flirty guys with their flirty, flirty eyes will have to flirt with dollies that are real. When I come home at night, she will be waiting. She'll be the truest doll in all this world. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a fickle-minded real-life girl.
Welcome back to Tube Talk on 1330 AM WRCA. We're joined this afternoon by Ross Hochstrasser. Ross is the secretary for the New England Antique Radio Club and has kindly consented to chat a little bit about the club and a little bit about radio and radio collecting with us today. How are you doing, Ross?
Oh, very good. And yourself?
We're doing good here this afternoon. We had some nice music. We had another nice chat with somebody else concerning the hobby this afternoon, and look forward to finding out a little bit more about the New England Club. It's a six-day club, from what I understand, Ross?
Yes, it's primarily centered in New Hampshire, but we have members that come from all over New England to participate in our activities.
And as far as the swap meets, I know we do two every year. I was looking through my notes here, and I was trying to find the date for the upcoming swap meet in October. You wouldn't have that off the top of your head, would you?
I don't. actually, I need to look that up.
Well, we'll be drummed out of the club with you know, this is... But we do two annually. We do in April and we do in October. It's in Manchester, New Hampshire, so it's pretty centrally located. It's right off the highway if you're up in northern Mass, and it's not really that bad. I get up there from Boston probably in about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. So we have a variety of different tables. We'll do some contest tables. We'll have folks who will bring a certain brand of radio. They may bring a certain type. If we're looking for certain types, we'll have some contests, some people's choice, so to speak. And then we'll also have some folks who are there to sell and swap and to sell and swap some advice as well about all the various radios in their collections. And if you're looking to buy or make a trade, they can be a good place to meet some people and get some good information on getting into the hobby.
Yes, I agree with all of that. It looks like the date is October 29th, which is a Saturday. I've got it written down for the 29th, and I believe that's accurate. So,
yeah, and if somebody wanted to check, they could go to NEARC.net is the club website, and they mm-hmm. post the information on the sites and some information on if you're interested in joining. They post what the dues are, and Ross has an interesting angle. He's in addition to professional life of working on clocks. Also had maintained a radio repair business for a while, which from what I understand is now a personal business. He does not take in work anymore. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what you like to collect, Ross, and how you got interested in radio?
Well, probably the easiest thing to do is start from the beginning. I became enamored with my grandparents' Zenith console radio, which was located in the house next door to where I grew up. I used to sneak into the house and sit and look at it. It's a Zenith model 7S558 dating from 1940. And that radio today sits in the bedroom here at the house where I live, and we turn it on occasionally and enjoy listening to it. Proceeded to get more and more interested in radios as a young kid, and that radio became in my possession when I was about 10 years old. We proceeded to continue to be interested in radios throughout my teenage years, although radio took a back seat to dating and girls and that sort of thing for a while, and then have gotten back into it in later years as a hobby. I started a business back in 1993, called Bavarian Radio Works, and I specialized in the repair and restoration of European radios, Grundig and Telefunken and Blaupunkt and Siemens and brands of that nature, and was actually the East Coast service rep for Grundig for a period of about 15 years. And we, in addition to restoring some of the old antique radios, one of the stipulations in being their East Coast service rep was working on the new radios that obviously come from China. So we did that as well. I pulled the plug on that just a couple of years ago.
Let me ask the $64 question. Which did you prefer working on, the made in China or those made in Germany?
Oh, without question, the German-made radios. Primarily my enjoyment came from working on the stuff with vacuum tubes in it. I did work on the Satellite and Music Boy series radios that were solid state, and they're very nice radios, but it doesn't give you the same kind of satisfaction that you get from working on vacuum tube-based equipment.
It's interesting. I have to ask about that Zenith that was at your was it your grandparents? Was that
yes.
a big black dial model?
Well, the medium-sized black dial
medium
model.
Medium-sized black dial.
Yeah, I actually have sitting right next to it in our bedroom, we have a 12S265, which is the big black dial, mm-hmm. The shutter dial with the motor drive and all that.
Now, what kid wouldn't love to look?
Tube.
I know, what kid, this is a fascinating thing to be able to stare at in the dark at night. I mean, especially when you're a kid, I must imagine.
Yes, indeed. I never actually saw the 7S558 working in my grandparents' house. It wasn't until after it came into my possession that I got it working. And I logged a lot of shortwave listening stations with it. I still have QSL cards here from 1970, 71, I think even into 72, that mostly were logged on that Zenith 7S558.
Yeah, that's funny because we were talking a little bit yesterday when I was asking you to be on the show. I went through a similar period from about late 70s, mid 80s when I was very much interested in shortwave. And it was sort of a neat historical time frame to be interested in it too, because there were some, there were some fissures in the iron curtain starting to develop, and it's sort of you know, the heyday of a lot of the Eastern European propaganda machines, you know, it was fading, and some of the stuff was, you know, some of the material they would cover was bordering on almost being humorous. It was like somebody was writing it for a movie. I used to think of that movie with Jimmy Cagney, 1, 2, 3, when these, you know, the broadcasters almost became caricatures of themselves a little bit in the way they would promote the Soviet way of life as opposed to the U.S. way of life. And as the curtain has come down, I know a lot of, well, shortwave has changed quite a bit because even BBC figures now, you'll just get your broadcast online. But there are still some shortwave programs emanating from those parts of the world from what I pick up.
Yeah, actually, one of the strongest stations that you can pick up now in the 40-meter band or 41-meter band is Radio Romania from Bucharest. They blast in here in the evening hours, very strong, and there are other ones as well. Deutsche Welle certainly still comes in, but BBC doesn't actually beam any signals to the United States anymore. You can catch them in their African service on 15.400 in the afternoons, but the shortwave community worldwide is unfortunately in demise because the cost of operating shortwave transmitters that put out 100,000 watts of power is staggering. The electric bill is just enough to drive you crazy. So it is advantageous to get online, but the internet is a house of cards, and shortwave radio will always work, whereas the internet may not always work. And that's one of the things that when I'm talking to people promoting ham radio that I always bring up. Aside from the fact that you can't make friends on a cell phone, but in addition to that, cell phones and the internet are all a house of cards. They require tremendous amounts of technology to make them work, and in doing so, in my opinion, anyhow, become less reliable.
You know, you mentioned Radio Romania, and I happened to have a quiet house one night, and I tuned in, and I can't recall the name of the composer, but they're having a festival on Radio Romania, and I guess in the country, for this particular composer, and his name escapes me right now, but they're playing some very nice music. And maybe this is something you can explain to me, because it's something that I've never quite gathered. You know, a lot of times when you listen to regular AM broadcast and you listen to music, you know, on whatever the normal broadcast band station might be that you're listening, it sounds okay. But when I was listening to Radio Romania on the shortwave, the music seemed to have a better sound to it, almost more fidelity. And I was just, is there any rationale behind that, or did I just pick a particularly good night to listen? It just seemed to sound better than if it was going to be played out of an AM station, a local, say, in Boston. It just sounded awful crisp.
Well, I think one of the things that may be different, I mean, every radio station sounds different because their lineup and their equipment is different, but I think you'll find that the shortwave stations don't use as much compression as the AM broadcast stations do, and also AM broadcast stations operate on a fairly narrow bandwidth. I don't know what the official numbers are for shortwave, but I think they actually have a little bit broader bandwidth to transmit in, which gives you a little bit better high frequency kind of separation and sound. But you don't hear the highly compressed signal with shortwave that you hear on the AM broadcast band. It doesn't carry as well if it's compressed.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because I have a floor model. It's a console, a 1939 Stromberg Carlson, and it's very sensitive on shortwave, and it's got a nice speaker in it too. It sounds good, but I can even remember when I would listen to. I used to get the old program guides from the BBC, and they had music programs, and usually if I was having, you know, an atmospherics issue or a reception issue, it would interfere with the way the music sounded. But you get these snippets when everything was, you know, just about right, and the music always sounded very good. I was always impressed at how what the sound quality was on the shortwave. I think it was another reason I was sort of interested in listening to it a lot of different, you know, I'd listen in the morning, I'd listen in the evenings. I was always trying to see if I could find that, you know, little window there when I get the, you know, the best sound, the maximum fidelity, especially for some of the music shows. And I loved listening to those bells when you were waiting for the relay to kick in on the BBC. You'd hear, dan, 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 dan. You know, is some of the things that you miss that, you know, as a kid, you wonder why people, as people say, why would you get interested in that? But there were a lot of interesting aspects to it, and there was a certain cache that the whole thing had. Long distance listening, this is all pre-internet. And I don't know, shortwave, I think, is, I don't know, doesn't seem to have the same level of adherence as there used to be. So I think you're probably right with saying it's gone online or gone to other, you know, different countries now who want to promote themselves, turn to different mechanisms to do so. Maybe you could tell us a little bit, Ross, what do you presently like to collect? I mean, what's your, you know, you used to like to work on the European radios. Is that the majority of your collection European, or do you have a little bit of everything?
Well, my European radio collection still exists. I still have a couple of Saba radios here in my workshop that I listen to. The focus of my collection has shifted a little bit into the boat anchor radios, the military
communications receivers, yeah.
The communications receivers and even transmitters, although I only have one military transmitter at this point. But I have a pile of radios here. In fact, when I spoke to you yesterday, I had just turned on my R390 to listen to the signal there, and the radio popped and smoke came out of it, and found a shorted capacitor in the power supply last night, and we took care of that. So that radio is back in operation again. But the big heavy military radios I find quite fascinating to work on because they were designed and built to be worked on, and they're very serviceable, and when they're working, the performance is unmatched. They really perform quite nicely.
And my dad had a friend who, when I was just a teenager and just starting to get interested, I had an old vacuum tube set. I had a Silvertone. He took me to see this friend of his, and he worked for the light company, and he was one of these, you know, greatest generation guys. He could fix cars. He could fix appliances. But I guess in the war, he was a radio operator, and, you know, not only if you're an operator, especially if you're in the field, you have to be able to do some repairs, and he got pretty good at it. So he'd taken, you know, TVs for work, and he'd taken radios for work. So he actually got my first tube set working for me. He was quite a character. But I remember some of the equipment he had down in his basement. And, you know, once you get the casing off the chassis, it's laid out so beautifully. It really looks like there's plenty of room to work on them. And then I know on some of the consumer-based radios, they would try to cram in as much as they possibly could to fit the cabinet, as if the electronic performance sometimes took a backseat to making the whole thing look a little bit better.
Well, that's entirely true with the consumer-based radios. I mean, that's why we have Catalan radios. They certainly weren't any sort of miracle of electronics, but boy, they are pretty to look at. And that's one of the things that was not necessarily taken into consideration on the military sets, but the consumer radios definitely were a juncture between art and science, and you can see that on the Radio Attic website. He has pictures of thousands of radios on there, and there are some pretty ugly ones around, but boy, there are some that are just very, very eye-appealing. And I think it requires a little bit of both in order to enjoy a radio. We certainly have some nice-looking ones around here, and I've got some uglies kicking around as well.
I was down at a fellow's shop who does repair and restoration work, and I have to say some of the European radios, they have smaller sets that look, you know, more like the working man set. You know, you weren't going to bust your budget to buy it, but I have seen some of the Philips sets and some of the Saba sets, and you must have to live in a castle to house some of these things. And they're huge, very impressive to look at. The dials are just absolutely gorgeous, you know, multiple tweeters, a mid-range, the great sound. But, you know, one of the things that I have a Grundig, and I mentioned it to you yesterday, it's a great sounding set. Usually, in some people who are new to the hobby, you equate a higher tube count with more sophistication, better sound, better reception. But I have this Grundig that sounds fantastic. It has two tweeters, one mid-range, and I believe it only has five tubes. And they just squeeze so much performance out of a minimum amount of tubes that the engineering work is exceptional.
Well, there's a reason for that. The German government after the war, taxed radios based on the number of tubes. So it prompted engineers to engineer their radios so that they would operate with multi-section tubes. This is why when you look in the back of a Grundig or a Telefunken or any of the German makes, for that matter, you'll find a tube called an EABC-80, which is two or three diodes and a triode. You'll also find ECL-86s, which are a triode and a pentode for your driver and output stage, things like that. But the driving force behind that was the fact that the consumer had to pay a tax based on the number of tubes. Grundig had an engineer by the name of Hans Knoll, who worked out a three-tube AM-FM receiver that outperforms most of the Zenith 9-tube radios of the same vintage. And
very interesting.
They did it by using reflex circuitry and things like that. But they're very impressive, and you look in the back, and there's only three tubes in there.
Now, some of those tubes that perform so many functions, I would imagine if they were exclusive to that type of radio, probably pretty hard to come by these days.
I've never really experienced any problems finding the tubes for most of the radios made in that time period. The ones that are getting really tough to find are the tuning eye tubes. But the audio output tubes and you know, the IF and RF tubes are all readily available as new old stock. Nobody's making them anymore. But the other thing, too, is that the European manufacturers tended to run those tubes fairly cool. If your audio output tube could take up to 350 volts on the plate, they'd run them at 250. And you can yank the audio output tube out of almost any of these German sets and test them, and they test almost 100%.
Yeah, you're going to get longer tube life.
They get very long tube life out of them. So it's rare in the time period that I was restoring these radios for a living. Most of the problems that we had with them was capacitors and resistors. Resistors would corrode, and the capacitors just fail, because they do. And tubes were generally the last thing that I would even look at when I was overhauling a set, because the tubes almost always were fine.
And that's something that's funny, too, you know, because even when you look at a little All-American 5 U.S. manufactured set, I think the inclination is, especially if you're new to the hobby, oh, well, it's probably just a tube, you know, is the reason this thing won't fire up. And in many cases, you know, the tubes test pretty good. It's a capacitor. It's a, you know, it's a cold solder joint. It's a variety of, it's an insulation problem. The cord is shot. You know, there's a lot of different things. But the tubes are amazingly resilient. It's a testament to their manufacturer. A lot of companies put an awful lot of engineering and research, and I know RCA certainly did. Sylvania made some great stuff. Tongue Saw, I guess, was run more like a lab than a you know, a retail company, and they produced some great stuff. Just to back up just a little bit, we were talking about Grundig, and you know, I have this Grundig. It's probably from the 50s. That's one of my favorite radios. But I do have a satellite. I did buy some Grundig, you know, shortwave stuff when I was really into the shortwave. My dad had a Grundig that's a small table model. I believe it's just AM and an FM band, but I believe it's solid state. It's probably shortly after the tube era ended for them, and it was manufactured in Portugal. And I looked in it once, and I have to say, though, to compare the layout to, like, the layout, if you look in, you buy a little cheap radio, it came out of Walmart today, and you look in it, it's just this hodgepodge. I wouldn't know where to even begin to try to identify different components and sections of the radio. The Grundig solid state, it's laid out. Everything is so square. It's gorgeous inside this thing. And it still performs pretty good for solid state. But then what exactly happened to Grundig? Did they get sold now and it's essentially a name and manufactured by a company that's based in the Orient, or what?
Well, Grundig in Europe had dissolved several years ago. I don't remember exactly when it happened, but the name was purchased by Lextronics of California, and Lextronics eventually morphed into a company called Eton, E-T-O-N.
Yep.
And they currently own the legal rights to use the name Grundig.
Nice.
But Grundig in Germany, I don't believe exists anymore. If they do, all they're making is shavers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But very sad story, because Grundig was not an old company. They started in business in 1947. and by a guy by the name of Max Grundig, oddly enough. And by 1957, 10 years later, he was the largest manufacturer of tape recorders in the world. And at the about the same time, also hit the largest manufacturer of television sets in Europe. So it was a hugely successful company. And they made a very, very decent quality product. Not probably the easiest radios in the world to repair or work on or even get parts for, but when you have a decent performing Grundig radio, you've really got something of quality. They're very, very nice radios.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how quickly sometimes these companies seem to gather momentum. I was talking with Ron Ramirez on an earlier show, and Philco, you know, essentially was going to be put out of business because of their, you know, their battery products were made obsolete when RCA developed radios you could plug into AC current. And just, you know, bingo, turn around and produce quality sets. And not only produce them, then go from, you know, number 25, number 26 as far as production and sales. They rocket up to, you know, the number one company. And it sounds sort of like a similar situation with Grundig, a very young company that made some very good stuff.
Yeah, they did. And their competition at the time was fairly strong, too. I mean, Telefunken had started business in 1903. And was actually celebrating the 50th anniversary in 1953 when Grundig was still ramping up. There was also Saba and Blaupunkt and another company called Mendy, which merged with another company and became Nord Mendy after a while. Siemens was an old company. They had been around for a while. And so Grundig had some pretty stiff competition and still managed to pull a rabbit out of his hat anyways. By the late 1950s, early 1960s, you started seeing the quality of all of these radios starting to head down because of competition from the Far East and maybe even to some extent from here in the United States as well. But one of the things that, I always pointed out to my customers when I was doing this for a living is that we in America, once it got to be 1950-ish, we kind of assumed that radio would be replaced by television. And the Europeans didn't have that attitude. I mean, the German radio manufacturers continued to develop radio and to perfect the art of radio building long after they did here in the United States. I mean, we kind of shifted our manufacturing interest into television, and then also, in addition to that, more into hi-fi. You know, that's why we had Scott and Fisher and Marantz and Macintosh and all those companies.
Component systems, yep, became
and they coexisted with television perfectly okay, but the Americans really thought that, radio was going to go away, and it didn't. And the Europeans did continue to develop radio, and that's why by 1960 it was difficult to find a decent American-made radio, but the German stuff was flying off the shelves. It was so nicely made, and it sounded so good and so much better than what we made here.
Well, especially if you like FM and classical music, you know, they're ideal for that. I have trouble picking up the classical station on some sets I have in the house, which is used to be out of Waltham, and I believe they're up in Lowell now. And
WCRB.
Don't know what exactly happened, what transpired there, but I used to have not as much of an issue getting it. But, you know, so I'll turn on the Grundig, and bing, it's there. You know, I don't really have to do too much in the way of tuning around, and it sounds great. It's fantastic sounding stuff. And you know, the other thing that I, you know, it seems is, I guess Zenith on our end in the U.S. was one of the last, well, they were a holdout on a lot of different fronts, but they still were manufacturing some pretty decent AM-FM sets with some pretty good sound. I don't know that you could say they, my own personal experience is the sound isn't quite as good as the Europeans, but at least they were still in the game, whereas Philco, RCA, those other companies, they just faded. They weren't interested in even trying to give the European radios a fight. And I guess Zenith was still even hand-wiring TV chassis into the early 80s, so you know, it's just they seem to outlast some of the other U.S. manufacturers, where it sounds as if at least they didn't give up on radio as soon in Europe as they did here.
No, it's kind of interesting to try and trace some of the histories of these companies and see what happened to them over the years. The only hi-fi equipment company left in this country is Macintosh, and they were They were sold to, I think it was a Clarion of Japan a number of years ago, and then they were purchased back either by Macintosh or by somebody else. Somebody else owns them at this point, but they're still over in New York, still manufacturing hi-fi equipment, and
good for them.
Virtually none of the other companies. They're a little mom-and-pop operations that make five amplifiers a year, but you don't see any big manufacturing going on.
Well, it's funny because when things were on the downswing for radios, you know, value engineering is one of, you know, I don't like that word, but I have a couple of decent, very nice-sounding, relatively small, good-sounding AM-FM Zenith sets. But, you know, to save a few cents, you know, they'd say, okay, well, we're going to produce this. We're not going to put in a dial light. And for me, it's just, you know, one of my personal pet peeves to have a tube radio without a dial light. And I said, well, what were these people thinking? Well, obviously, they weren't thinking about me and that somebody would actually probably want to listen to the thing 40 or 50 years later. But, you know, value engineering, they come in and they start to say, you know, much like, you know, a lot of people who are very interested in American auto manufacturing and say, okay, how can we make it look just the same, perform about just as good, but squeeze every last dime out of it and make the thing even cheaper to compete? And it's really a shame because I know it probably accelerated, you know, the exodus of some of the electronics business from the United States. So it's tough to take, but it's a fact of life. Just a couple of other quick things. We try to steer things back a little bit to anybody who might be listening or interested in getting into the hobby. Ross is a member and on the board, I guess. You're on the board. You're elected officer of the New England Club, right?
I'm not sure if I'm an elected officer. I am the secretary.
You were selected.
I was selected. But and I'm not very good at it, I must say. I'm not a paperwork type of person. My wife will attest to that.
Your shorthand isn't that good anymore?
No, it never was. And my handwriting is even worse. But my fourth grade teacher told me I needed to learn how to type. That's how bad it is. But anybody interested in getting into our club, we're always very welcoming of any new members. And the unfortunate reality is that we're the age of most of our members is up there, so we lose a lot of members to attrition, obviously. And any young people that are interested in getting into the club, we're more than happy to have them come aboard. It's a great day to come up to Manchester and see all the old radios. There's a snack bar there that serves a pretty decent breakfast, and there's have even started an educational series there where we try to teach a little 20-minute class.
How did that go over the last time? Because I was upset. I couldn't make that meet. Work interfered with that one, but I know you were – I think the topic was just what to look for if you're a relatively new collector and you're out looking around, whether it's a swap meet or a flea market or an antique store. What was the basis of it? What to look for, what to shy away from, that type of thing?
Actually, that was the first class that
first
we taught. This past April, I taught a class in – how to replace capacitors in a radio, which is very similar to how to replace spark plugs in a car. I mean, it's something that you have to do. And it went over very well. I had a group of probably about 8 or 10 interested enthusiasts sitting there gobbling up every word I said and writing things down, which always makes me nervous. But it was great. We had a very good group, and it was well received. And I don't know what's on the agenda for October yet for a class. I'm trying to get some other people to jump in and pick up the slack and teach a class on something that they know about, because I don't know at all. I know very little, actually, and it would be nice to have somebody that can show us how to maybe repair a crack in a Catalan case, or maybe refinish a wooden case, or touch up a finish, or I mean, there's any number of different topics that could be expounded upon by somebody. And I would like to invite anybody that's interested into coming in and teaching a class. You only have to talk for 20 or 25 minutes and then, you know, take questions. And We're not looking to give out doctorates. We're looking just to give you a taste of any particular topic.
Well, you know, it goes to the point where, you know, it's nice to talk to somebody who can look at a piece of electronics and say, gee, that sounds great or that looks good. You know, in the modern world of electronic sales, you go into whether it's, you know, one of the few left hi-fi stores or if you go into one of these big box stores, they can tell you an awful lot about the features and what it does, and it has this and it has that and it will do this and you can connect it to this. But if you were to ask that person what makes it work, you'd probably get an answer, well, you plug it in, you know, the wall. And but you talk to especially some of the old-timers, you know, not only is it nice that they know the technology involved, in some cases that was their job. You know, they might have worked as a technician at a radio repair shop, or they might have done factory service work, or they might have done, you know, been exposed to it during World War II or Korea. But, you know, it's the fact that I can make something with my hands, and I'm understanding of what I'm doing. I'm a builder, not just a consumer. And then I turn it on, and I have the enjoyment to listen to whether it's a nice shortwave or I'm doing a little DXing on AM, which is just another term for trying to pick up distant stations on AM. I mean, it's a nice sense of satisfaction, much like somebody if they work on cars or they do a little carpentry work. It's the feeling that comes with doing something with your hands and your mind and then putting it on a shelf and saying, gee, that really came out nice. And isn't that, you know, and that's just something that's lost, unfortunately, in the modern world of electronics. So it's another reason to come on out to the swap meet. Check out NEHAC.net. I was chatting yesterday. I was trying to constantly on the move now to try to find people who might have a little time and be interested in chatting with us, and I was talking to a fellow out at the California Historic Radio Society, I believe is how you say their club. They have the advantage of a central location, almost like a clubhouse, for lack of a better term. And, you know, we're a little decentralized, but we do have the two meets, and Manchester isn't that far, so hopefully we can drum up a little interest in the hobby. And, Ross, I know you have your regular work day to get back to, too, so I appreciate you coming on the show. And hopefully we'll chat again. Maybe we can pick a manufacturer, we'll pick a European company, or we'll try to pick a topic that might have some general appeal as well as some appeal to the collecting community, and we'll chat about that for a little bit. So thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Take care, Ross. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Well, it was nice for Ross to share a little of what he knows about the world of radios with us. Once again, you're listening to Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. We have an email address set up for the show. It's tubetalk1@gmail.com. If you're interested in leaving us a comment on the show, we'd love to hear from you. It's tubetalk1@gmail.com. How about a little Hoagy Carmichael as we wind things up?
Nothing goes wrong, nothing goes right. This one thing I know. When love goes wrong, a man takes flight, and women get a uppity-o. The sun don't beam, the moon don't shine, the tide don't ebb and flow. The clock won't strike, a match won't light. When love goes wrong, nothing goes right.
The blues.
A sorry sight. It's like I said, you're better off dead. When love has lost its glow, so take this down in black and white. When love goes wrong, nothing goes right.
Good night now.